Hello and welcome to the Black Lodge screening room.
That's good. That's a good way to start it. Hello, and welcome to the Black Lodge Screening Room. My name is Jessica.
My name is Max.
And we are your hosts for this podcast. This is podcast number one of the Black Lodge Screening Room, and this is all about horror movies and scary things that we watch. You might know me from the podcast Cat Context, which I do with my friends Aralade and Alindreal, and we've touched a little bit on horror movies there, but horror movies are like a passion of mine, so I'm really excited to be able to talk about them.
That and the fact that at least Elendil is a big baby who is scared of horror movies. It makes it hard to do that on Cat Context.
That's true. He's like scared of like Sleepy Hollow, the TV show.
That's adorable.
I know. Sleepy Hollow is not scary. We're talking about real scary horror scary movies here. And I thought it might be good to kick this off because this is the, as I said, the first episode. And so you guys, the listeners, don't really know who we are or what our taste in movies is. And I don't want to like play our whole hand now because otherwise there'll be no point in doing a whole series of podcasts if we just be like, here's all our favorite movies. Goodbye. So instead, I thought we could open up each episode with like a couple questions. So, you know, you get to know us gradually in our taste in movies. So I've got a couple questions for you.
Oh, good. This way they can learn to dislike my opinions slowly rather than all at once. That's good.
They can learn to disregard you.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Just like everyone else.
So here's my first question for you to get to know, getting to know Max in horror movies.
Oh, yes.
What was the last horror movie you saw that you think is underrated, that people should see and have not been seeing?
Well, okay, see, I had a plan for this and I've changed it sort of at the last minute. There's something else I want to talk about, and specifically being The Guest, the Simon Barrett, Wingard, Cruise most recent movie. It's right on the border between being a horror movie and sort of a suspenseful thriller, but I felt like it qualifies in this case. It is a very high-tension sort of movie.
If nothing else, you know, Simon Barrett, who's the writer, and Adam Wingard, who's the director, they're a team of horror movie people. So
yeah,
I think it's
definitely
Probably fair, given that, to put The Guest in there. So you like The Guest?
Yeah, I feel like that was one of those movies that sort of slipped under a lot of people's radar, because the audience for, you know, Barrett Wingard movies is generally, you know, it's horror. I mean, they did Your Next, they did, you know, Horrible Way to Die. Their movies are generally of a pretty specific genre. And since this kind of fell outside of that window, I think a lot of hardcore horror fans overlooked it. And I think a lot of mainstream movie fans don't really know about them, so it kind of just went over their heads completely. But yeah, I thought that was a rock-solid homage to 80s paranoid thrillers. I mean, it was like, you know, it was The Stepfather on steroids.
And the soundtrack was amazing. And I can say that
was amazing.
Because in my mind, that was actually going to be my answer to this question. So I should have gone first.
Yes,
is what I'm
sucker.
Saying. The Guest was so good. So given that you've already given an answer to that, I'm going to have to come up with something. So I'm going to say The Visit.
Okay.
And I want you to know, I never thought that I would answer an M. Night Shyamalan movie at this question.
Yeah.
But The Visit was great. You know, it wasn't like it was, I described it, I wrote a review of it on my blog, and I described it as sort of like amped up goosebumps. It's not horror, like gory, whatever. It's suspenseful, it's a little scary, it's a little silly. It's definitely the horror comedy genre, but it was surprisingly good. And I didn't see the twist coming because, yes, there's a twist. And I didn't see it coming. I thought the acting was fantastic. I thought the script was fun. It was just fun. It was a fun movie that, you know, PG-13, you're going to watch with your kids on Halloween.
Fair enough.
So I thought that was good. Okay, so that was question number one. So we have The Guest, mm-hmm, and The Visit. Question number two, and I'm going to answer first this time so you can't steal my answer.
No, please, go ahead.
What was the last horror movie you saw that you were disappointed in? It's going to be my question. My answer to that is going to be Starry Eyes.
Really? Okay.
Ugh. So, Starry Eyes is an indie horror movie about a woman who will sacrifice everything to become a famous actress. The whole idea of, you know, are you willing to sell your soul for fame has been done so many times. I mean, that was basically like Suspiria. It's been done over and over again. And
I don't know that I would compare it to Suspiria, but go on.
But
go
not,
on.
Not directly, but just the central thesis of, you know, how much would you give up to be famous? And, you know, moving to Hollywood and selling your soul. And it just was so, like, beaten into your head that was, it was really heavy.
It was, but I think I liked it more than you. I mean, I think I agree that the ending was a train wreck in slow motion.
Yeah.
But I liked the movie in that I feel like it's a really good example of kind of the hidden Hollywood genre of sort of like, you know, the evil behind the smiling faces and, you know, behind the pretty exterior. There's, you know, there's always these hints of, like, you know, a dark, sordid, extremely deviant undercurrent. And I felt like the second season of True Detective was almost touching on that, kind of, you know, the real menace and the secrets going on by this veneer of respectable wealth and popularity. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, that was really the best part of Starry Eyes, was sort of the evil cult that you just sort of glimpse the edges of. You never really see what Estrella's Pictures or Estrella's the cult is really up to in any way beyond making weird, pretty mimic monster people famous. Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, that there was... I thought that was the best part. Everything that happened to the main character was... I mean, that actress definitely gave it 120%, but yeah.
Oh, sure. You know, it was well-directed, I think, and definitely well-acted. And I definitely see your point. I just thought... Mm-hmm. They took that whole message and they just hammered it into you. And I was just like, ugh, I know. People give up all kinds of stuff. I know. Hollywood's a tough place.
I thought it was okay. I definitely liked it better than you did.
It sounds like you did. All right, so what's your answer to the question?
All right, so this one's going to get me some flack from you, but this is one from a little further back in our viewing history. For a little reference for the audience, I go to great lengths to avoid movies I think I'm not going to like. I try very hard not to watch bad
really?
Movies.
You try not to watch bad movies?
Yeah, I work at it. I think it's a full-time job in the horror genre.
It is. That is true, yeah.
But, so the one recently that really kind of let me down was As Above, So Below. Yeah.
What?
I said it.
What?
I said it. I'll say it again. As Above, So Below was overrated.
Listeners, yeah. Dear listener, you cannot see me, but my jaw is on the floor because As Above, So Below is on my list of, like, movies that was so surprisingly good that I adore it.
It was okay. It was serviceable, but it was a considerable letdown from what I was hoping for.
For people who haven't seen it, I guess it's a movie podcast.
Right, as we should probably talk about. So As Above, So Below... that was the Dowdle brothers, if I'm right.
Yes, it was.
Okay, so the brothers Dowdle, I'm one of those rare few people, I think, that actually sat and watched all the way through the Poughkeepsie tapes, and I felt that the first half of the Poughkeepsie tapes had so much promise for, you know, this writer-director team that I had really high hopes for their first, like, mass-distributed, properly funded horror movie. And I was really disappointed that they couldn't get away from found footage. I was really disappointed by the ending, which completely defanged the entire movie.
Okay, you're wrong.
That's fair. Okay.
No, As Above, So Below, the whole concept is that it's a bunch of treasure hunters, basically, ancient treasure hunters, and they're going to the subterranean world under Paris.
Yeah, it's the Parisian catacombs. You go to the Parisian catacombs and find a gateway to hell.
Right, that is very, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I thought that, like, the setting was great, because, I mean, the catacombs of Paris are goddamn terrifying.
True.
You heard the story about the guy that really did disappear there back in, like, the 80s or 90s, right?
Yeah.
Can't remember when that was. They found his camera, and they never found him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some serious straight-up nightmare fuel. Just the thought of being lost in hundreds of miles of catacombs, you know, full of bones under Paris, that's scary.
That's probably bad.
But, you know, I mean, the movie itself, the things they see in there, some of that was okay, but most of it was just so ham-handed. I mean, you know... The girl finds her, you know, the specter of her dead father literally hanging there.
It starts to become evident as they're underground that it's not just a sort of monster situation, that there's something messing with their minds. And I love movies where something's messing with your mind.
Well, right. The unreliable narrator is one of the most tried and true mechanisms of horror.
Right.
You know, the notion of, is this real? Is this person going insane? You know, Lovely Molly is like my favorite recent example of that.
Yeah.
Of, you know, the movie's entirely cast in such a way as, this could be real, this could just be, you know, fear-induced delusions.
Right.
But As Above, So Below never even bothers that. No, they just make it clear, this shit's real. This shit's really happening.
I feel like I've learned something about you today.
Yeah.
And your taste in movies.
That I don't like happy endings in horror.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. I have learned that. And I hope you, the listener, have learned something from that today. See, uh-huh. Did you like that?
Yeah,
like,
I thought that was good.
We call that in the biz the segue.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, thank you. Speaking of segues.
Yes.
That's not a very good segue.
Okay.
Our main central topic for today is we're going to talk about John Carpenter movies. Because, you know, it's our first episode, and how can you stay away from the greatest?
It is John fucking Carpenter.
And this spawned from a conversation we had the other day about John Carpenter, and just strictly sticking to his horror movies,
uh-huh.
obviously.
Uh-huh.
For the purposes of this podcast, I want to talk about what our favorite John Carpenter horror movie is, but I have a caveat to this conversation.
We do. We had to put rules to this.
We did. Because, obviously, there's Halloween and The Thing, and they are two of, not only of his best movies, but two of the greatest horror movies of all time.
I would agree with that.
So, I don't think, I'm not interested in parsing, doing some sort of which is better, Halloween or The Thing.
And the answer, of course, is Halloween, but that's neither here nor there.
No, the answer's The Thing.
No, but we'll get back to that in a minute. We're going to circle back around to that in a minute.
So with the caveat of not those two movies, which uh-huh. I know is a bit of a stretch, but because you can't.
Although, an interesting note, this is just a little side thing for the audience that they may find interesting,
uh-huh.
is thanks to Bob Clark, the director of Black Christmas, uh-huh. and a conversation he had with John Carpenter, they created both the slasher genre and the holiday-themed horror movie at the same time. This is a true story. Bob Clark made Black Christmas in 1974. And he was talking to John Carpenter after that. They knew each other, you know, socially,
right. through,
you know, common circles they both ran in. And Clark expressed a desire to make a horror movie just, you know, desecrating every popular holiday in the hearts of America.
Right.
And the next one he wanted to do was Halloween.
Right.
And then circumstances came about that he was not able to do the movie, and he moved on to other projects. And John Carpenter said, that was a great idea, and I want to make a Halloween-themed horror movie. What could I do? I have an idea. Someone in a Halloween costume chasing someone around, chasing people around trying to murder them,
right.
and everyone just thinks it's part of the holiday. And that was the genesis of Halloween, the slasher genre,
wow.
and the holiday horror movie.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so there you go. That's why Halloween is the better of the two. But also a little bit of history for you.
Yeah, okay. You kind of took that in like a whole, this is my thesis thing in the end that I don't agree with.
Yeah, but anyway.
But yeah, no, but yeah, that was a very good story.
Interesting, isn't
that's
it?
That's very interesting. Black yeah. Christmas is great.
But, yeah, well that's, that's another episode.
That's another episode in itself. 70s horror movies. Anyway, John Carpenter.
John Carpenter.
So, given that we do not want to have a match between Halloween and The Thing.
Right.
What is your second, or I guess third favorite, scary John Carpenter movie?
And it's important you say scary, because then that allows you to remove the Kurt Russell oeuvre from the table.
Correct, yeah.
Because otherwise, Big Trouble Little China is going to kick everyone's ass and go home with a girl.
Right, well, clearly. But we're not doing that. This is
no,
scary.
For horror,
yeah.
For horror, it has to be In the Mouth of Madness. In the Mouth of Madness is, I think, one of the... I'm not going to say one of the best, but definitely in the very top tier of Cthulhu kind of mythos-themed horror movies
in
the modern era.
So that was like that's like 90s, isn't
94.
It?
94.
94, and that's Sam Neill.
Sam Neill at his most Sam Neill-y.
Right, yeah, no, that, yeah. He was at peak Sam Neill.
When he's crawling around in his cell, drawing crosses on his face with a crayon, that is the most Sam Neill you will see in...
Nice, very
nice. That is exceedingly Neil.
So it's a Lovecraft story?
Well, it's Lovecraftian.
See, right,
the thing
okay.
about Lovecraft and the mythos is so many different authors have contributed to it. In his own lifetime, he actively encouraged all of the other authors of his era who were interested in speculative fiction to contribute and write their own parts of the mythos. And he very specifically didn't want it to be just his thing.
Right.
So it's fair to say it's Lovecraftian. The whole notion of, and this is an old enough movie that I feel pretty comfortable spoiling this at this point, the notion that this author, thinning the barrier between our world and the far dimensions where creatures beyond madness dwell through his books, and that everyone who reads it becomes sort of a little gateway into this,
right,
from that terrible world into ours.
Right, and that's sort of the pitch, is that Sam Neill's trying to track down this author.
Right, yeah.
Potentially doing the devil's work.
Well, he's disappeared. The whole premise is he's an insurance investigator looking for this author who has disappeared,
right,
leaving his publisher on the hook for a book with a huge amount of demand for it and no book.
So tell me, why do you like this?
Well, okay, for one thing, obviously, it's a horror movie about writers, which... to people who don't know, I write horror fiction when I am not doing other things. The whole notion of books that can drive people mad, I find that anytime you have a movie or a book where anyone that encounters it goes crazy, I'm going to be interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Cigarette Burns, The Masters of Horror, which was also, wasn't that John Carpenter
too?
That
was John Carpenter.
There you go, John Carpenter, once again. That's always going to be the kind of story that I'm going to gravitate towards anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, some of the effects and the weird shit that happens in that movie,
mm-hmm,
there's a sequence that is completely irrelevant to the entire story that happens when they're trying to escape the crazy town where this author is holed up, where they keep driving past the same boy riding his bicycle, furiously pedaling his bike through the night, and every time they see him, he's older and older until finally they look out the window and it's just this old man still pedaling along hopelessly on his bike. It's just so eerie and weird and inexplicable. It is... and like the scenes with like the creepy pack of feral kids chasing the dog through the town over and over forever.
Right.
That stuff right there, that's peak John Carpenter weird.
I mean, I have to say In the Mouth of Madness is not one of my favorites, but I find it's a little... I think of it as like horror light.
Really?
Yeah. Now, let me tell you about my choice for this one.
Uh-huh. I mean, I'm taking all this patiently because I'm going to get to start disassembling your choice in a minute here, but go ahead.
And I may have created a horror movie podcast almost entirely so I can make a passionate defense of this movie, and it is Prince of Darkness. Whoa! So, Prince of Darkness has got that kind of... it was 1987, so it's got a little bit of that kind of 80s, more gritty, things weren't quite as polished as they were in the 90s. And it is about... A group of grad students in various disciplines who are going to examine a strange cylinder that is found in the basement of a church that may be something related to another world. And they don't know, so they put together their best and brightest grad students and they all stay in the church over the weekend to study it, and things don't go very well. But it also stars Alice Cooper.
In the one shining point of light in an otherwise crap movie.
As a probably mind-controlled by Satan leader of street people who also turns out to be possibly made of bugs.
Uh-huh.
Or eaten by bugs. I don't know. There's a lot of bugs.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot. It's so... okay. I like it because it's raw. And it's creepy. And there's a segment at the end, which I will say without giving away any plot... but it's sort of a vision of the future, and it's got a bad ending. You like bad endings.
I do like bad endings in my horror.
And there's weird physics and goo and zombies and...
That's really the thing I feel like we have to address here, is the fact that the Prince of Darkness, the Lord of Evil, the original sin... is a Nalgene bottle full of green goo.
Yeah, because he's so evil, he has to be in a bottle.
Okay, but I guess, I mean, that raises so many more questions than it answers.
Donald Pleasance as a priest who is trying to find his way back to God.
You know, and I mean, I think... the thing is, you say raw, I say unfinished. You say creepy, I say janky.
Well, I mean, it is kind of janky. I'm not going to lie. It is not considered to be one of John Carpenter's best movies. I think it's got like a 6.5 rating on IMDb.
Uh-huh. It's better than The Fog.
Well, come on.
I'm throwing you some softballs here, but
thanks.
It's still true.
It is better than The Fog. Look, it's better than John Carpenter's Vampires.
Oh, God.
But I liked... what's the Mars one?
Ghost of Mars?
Ghost of Mars. I like Ghost of Mars. I mean, Ghost of Mars.
It was perfectly serviceable. It's a great movie to watch while you're sick and immobilized on the couch.
Yeah, and it's got Jason Statham in it, and It originally had Courtney Love cast in the Natasha Henstridge role.
Really?
Yes. She was supposed to do it and then dropped out, probably for drug-related reasons.
That seems like a fair bet.
About around that time. I would have loved Courtney Love's Ghost of Mars. I would have been really into that.
I'd have watched it.
But anyway, I'm going to go with Prince of Darkness. I got to go with the Alice Cooper and the bugs. He's made of bugs.
But really, is it like, do you like the movie or do you like just Alice Cooper's bit in the movie?
No, I like the movie.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I like the whole movie. I'm not even like a huge non-Prince of Darkness Alice Cooper fan.
Mm-hmm. But there's a reason Prince of Darkness was written by John Carpenter under another name. I'm just saying there might have been something going on there that he didn't want to take credit for writing that.
He's always been kind of funny, too. Like, he won't watch his own stuff.
He has claimed that has never seen any of his movies after the theatrical release.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't know. I can never entirely forgive him for the war.
Well, okay, that's the point I was going to get to kind of wrap up this segment is, can we agree at least on his worst scary movie? I was going to say The Ward.
Yeah.
You were going to say The Ward. We're both going to say The Ward.
I would argue that, like, the ultimate loser is going to be The Ward. That was a fucking dumb movie.
It was terrible. That's from 2010. I just lacked soul.
I felt it was, the first third of the movie was good, the middle third of the movie, the second and third of the movie, I was kind of thinking, oh, jeez, okay, let's wrap this up, because this isn't going right. How I hoped it would. And then the ending, I mean, is just such
it's got one of those twist endings that's just like, it devalues the whole rest of the movie.
Exactly, yeah.
The Ward, for people who don't know, The Ward is about a group of young women who are in a mental institution.
And there's a ghost picking them off. Or is there? Yeah.
And it's not good. That was his last movie he's directed so far. Of course, John Carpenter's still alive and kicking and on tour, but maybe not doing any more movies. But that's okay, because he has a hell of a legacy.
He did invent slasher movies.
He's done some amazing, amazing movies. But I would say that The Ward was not one of them.
The Ward was...
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
In a world without gas.
In a world where the sun burns cold.
In a world that's powered by violence.
Trailer talk! So you picked the trailer that we watched for this one, so why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
So, the movie I picked for our trailer review is February by... God, what's his name? It's Osgood or Oswald Perkins? It's Anthony Perkins' son. And it's the movie February... which is a possession horror movie, maybe possession, again, like Lovely Molly. This is a great example of the unreliable narrator of Are They Crazy? Is This Real?
Mm-hmm.
Where it follows technically three girls at a remote elite boarding school who are together, largely alone in the school over Christmas break.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, only two of them are in the school together. Emma Roberts plays a fellow schoolmate who years previously went completely batshit crazy and was institutionalized.
Okay, see, that's interesting. I did not understand that from the trailer, so I appreciate you explaining what was going on there.
No problem. And she's making her way back to the school, and it is heavily implied in the trailer that she has done bad things, capital B, capital T,
mm-hmm.
and is coming back to do more bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, at the school, we have these two girls. One is sort of the extremely prim, polite... This is Kiernan Shipka, who I have no idea who she is. She seems like a very kind of self-contained lady.
She played the little Draper girl in Mad Men.
See, I never really watched Mad Men.
Right,
so
she was the Draper daughter.
Well, okay, so the Draper daughter. It's on the festival circuit right now, where it is just knocking people dead left and right.
Is it? I haven't heard anything about it.
All of the early festival buzz has been overwhelmingly positive.
Interesting. I liked this trailer. I thought it was... It did not give away too much of the story, which is a plague with trailers nowadays. I'm so tired of trailers that give away everything.
Although you do have the one scene of Kiernan Shipka doing the impossible backbend.
Oh, yeah. No, she definitely, there's some bad devil stuff going on there.
There is some bad shit going on.
She does
on
that backbend that all people do when they've been possessed by the devil.
Yeah, apparently the devil turns you into a gymnast.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this looked like an interesting trailer. Devil stuff is back, huh?
I'm actually really glad that
like cults,
possession
and
cults.
Yeah,
that's well. We finally, I think we've gotten past zombies. We've I think people are finally getting sick of zombies. Went through a spate of vampire movies for a little bit there again.
Yeah. And now we're back to, like, devil cults. Because there's a number of movies I've seen coming out. Mm-hmm. Last Shift, I think, is another one.
Last Shift, The Witch.
Witch, yeah. Witch also looks, and that looks great, too.
That looks fantastic.
Talk about that. But, yeah, Devil, Young Ladies in Devil Cults is definitely on its way back in popularity. Yeah. Which, I like that stuff. And I've always enjoyed the, you know, is she crazy or is she being possessed by the devil?
Yeah.
And it's always the ladies, but that's horror movies. Horror movies are always ladies.
Well, but there's actually a certain amount of precedent, I think, with the young ladies thing. It's the concept of the Vestal Virgin.
Right, yeah.
That the devil delights in despoiling purity.
Right.
That's why these are always just such, you know, kind of virginal, but, you know.
Right, but prim and proper.
Prim and proper young ladies. And the heavy implication there is the young men already have the devil in them, so really, right. There's not much left to do.
Yeah.
But you know, that's I think where a lot of that comes from is that you know.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Would be interesting. I would actually enjoy. That'd be a nice subversion of the trope. Actually, I would like to see a movie with a young man who you know is perhaps prim and proper and then succumbs to the devil in some way.
That's an interesting. That'll be a little bit of homework for our next episode to try and find an example of that happening where that was the central plot.
Yeah, I can't recall anything, but I'll have to do as little research. But that would be cool. I would enjoy seeing that. But this looks interesting. I'm not. Like 100% on board. It kind of remains to be seen how they actually do it, but I like the trailer. It looked interesting, a little arty.
Very arty.
A little, you don't really know what's happening. Yeah, I definitely, not too gross. It looks like it's going to be more like spooky, ghosty.
I get the impression it's a lot more of a cerebral horror movie.
Right, exactly.
I think it's going to be solid. The earlier reviews are really strong.
Yeah. I'm going to say not theater, but I'd do it video on demand.
I would see this in a theater just because of the ambiance of a big dark room. It seems like it'll be a fun one to watch with people. And can I just say that I am pleasantly surprised by Emma Roberts as a horror scream queen in her various permutations?
Do you mean on Scream Queens?
Well, actually, least of all in that one. I meant more like American Horror Story and now this.
Mm-hmm.
She has found a niche. And I just have to wonder if you think Eric, her dad, is a little bitter that...
Wait, her dad's Eric Roberts?
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that!
She's Eric Roberts' daughter and the niece of Julia Roberts.
I did not know that.
You just learned something new today.
How?
Yeah. Yeah.
Today I learned.
The B-movie horror queen of our era is the daughter of the B-movie horror king of the previous generation.
Okay, well, I find that deeply pleasing.
Right?
I actually have not seen her in anything before because I didn't watch American Horror Story because I gave up on it. So all I've seen her in is Scream Queens. I'm not a big fan of Scream Queens, but she does a great job in it. So
she is detestable in that.
Oh, yeah. No, she is. Absolutely. She's a loathsome character.
Yeah.
Which she portrays excellently with gusto. Great gusto. So, good on her. No slight on her as an actress that I'm not really into the show.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's the first episode, dude.
Not bad.
That's the pilot.
I feel good. Do you feel good?
I feel good. I want to watch more scary movies now.
That's the idea.
Oh, yeah.
Working as intended.
We are going to try and do this on a regular basis, maybe on a weekly basis, except for next week.
Next week's a little busy.
Because we're getting married.
That's pretty much all that's happening next week.
Yeah, so there won't be time to record a podcast, but we wanted to, because it's October, it's the month for scary movies, we wanted to get a first episode out there so you guys can listen and hear what we're up to, and we'll be back in 2 weeks in this case. Talking about scary things that do not have to do with weddings.
Right. And more importantly, that gives people time to send us suggestions, recommendations, chair shots, complaints.
It's like you read my mind. If you would like to respond to this podcast, you can leave a comment here on the site where it is on leorblog.com. Or you can also email us at blsc@leorblog.com.
Tell us how wrong we are.
Oh, absolutely. And tell us what the last horror movie you saw that disappointed you was and what the last horror movie you saw that you think is underrated was. Let us know your answers to our questions and we will read them out next time. And that's it. We will not be putting this episode on iTunes yet, but soon we will be on iTunes and you may rate us there and we would appreciate that.
Yes, please.
And until then, stay spooky, kids. Look, that was my attempt at a sign off.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
But it is spooky, eh, kids? Ow!